Shut up!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports Station.
And Brook Wire, you are. And Brook, you are.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Oh, yes. Hello and good morning. It is Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com. The Seattle Sports application here on a formal Friday.
Nicely
all those
done.
Podcast platforms out there. What'd you say, Justin?
Nicely done. Way to remember that. Formal Friday.
I remember like one out of every four Fridays.
Well, you did it today.
Today was one of them.
Starting off well.
How do you handle it when you know, like you can feel yourself getting a cold? What do you do?
Oh, no.
Like you don't
stay
have a cold.
From us.
You don't have a cold. You're not sick. You're not like all glossy. You don't have all that going on. But you can feel just like way up at the back and top of your throat. Like, you know that like in 2 or 3 days, there's a good chance you might have a cold.
Don't get me sick before I go on vacation.
This is good timing because what I do is just completely sleep as much as humanly possible.
Right.
Just drink a bunch of liquid.
Try to sleep it off.
Yes.
Sleep.
Yeah. And it actually has worked for me in the past.
And no dairy of any kind.
No dairy.
Yeah, that's. I feel like whenever you feel a cold coming
on. That helps eliminate the mucus.
It gets gunked.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do? You take anything at that point?
Sure.
What do you take?
Anything that's going to kill symptoms for me. I don't like feeling it.
Yeah, but that makes it last longer. You don't want to kill symptoms.
Take some emergency.
Okay, so you start chugging the vitamin C.
I feel like it's too late for all that. I feel like that.
You think I needed to do that weeks ago? Right.
That's
too late for me.
It's never too late to give your body some vitamins if it's fighting.
I don't know. I've heard a theory that it is too late, that if you start doing the vitamin C once you're already sick, then that like will actually have the exact opposite effect of what you're looking for.
What?
I've heard that. It doesn't make it true.
Just listen,
I read it on the internet.
Tell Heather, like, listen, I'm going to need to be babied for a few days. I'm
going
to be sleeping.
Yeah.
I'm going to need some sort of non-dairy treats.
Yep.
And just, you know, hot soups or something.
Non-dairy treats.
Yeah.
All right.
Like, not ice cream, but maybe some popsicles.
I had ice cream last night.
Oh.
It was great. You know what I had? I had an ice cream sandwich. Like a good old-fashioned ice cream sandwich. Nothing fancy about it. Just an ice cream sandwich. You like that?
I'm happy for you.
Ice cream sandwiches are underrated, man.
I like it in the summertime.
Oh,
true.
More. Aren't you from the Northeast? You're supposed to be able to eat ice cream any time of year. Don't even bring me any of that, you know, summertime ice cream stuff.
By the way, you guys are giving me grief for my pickle love the other day.
Yeah.
You probably don't even like pickle. Betsy heard that.
Yeah.
And yesterday came home, counted 15 different jars of pickles.
I know, but I've never seen any of them.
Okay, so they don't exist.
Well, I mean, first of all, we'd have to believe that Betsy existed in order to believe that the pickle story is true.
Right, okay.
And G will be in this morning at 8:30, I'm sure, with more on that story. So I wanted to tie together, to start off the show today, two things, one thing that I read and one thing that I saw. And I think they very much go together. Okay? So I'm going to start with what I read early this morning, and then I will tie it around to something I saw and maybe other people saw yesterday. So this was from something called The Big Think. I don't know what that is, but I ran across it, stumbled across it this morning. BigThink.com. And it's some guy named Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I don't know if you know anything about Dietrich.
Well, that's not a real
or
name.
DB, as I call him. He argues that stupidity is worse than evil because stupidity can be manipulated and used by evil. He also argues that stupidity tends to go hand in hand with acquiring power. Anyway, he goes on from there. But he's got this adage. Says there's an internet adage that goes, debating an idiot is like trying to play chess with a pigeon. It knocks the pieces over, craps on the board, and then flies back to its flock to claim victory, which I think is brilliantly funny. Yeah. Anyway. It's all about stupidity, and you guys can read it if you want. Go to bigthink.com. That's their thing, not mine. But as I was thinking about the prevalence of stupidity, I couldn't help but be reminded of the top 10 catcher list that came out from Major League Baseball
Thank
yesterday.
You.
That somehow, some way doesn't include our guy, Justin's guy, best friend. Quite frankly, Justin, I'm a little disappointed you're letting me fight your battles for you. I thought you would be the one stepping up to defend your guy, Cal Raleigh. And yet here I am having to make a whole big point about the prevalence of stupidity
in leaving him
off the top 10 list.
I'm supporting my friend behind the scenes with some text messages and calls. I don't need to go out and publicly fight his fight.
I see. You want him to do that.
Friends do.
Him being the great wordsmith that he is, you're expecting him to go out and make the fight.
Well, if you knew him like I did, you'd know that's the kind of support he needs.
Got it. Okay. Well, here's their top 10. JT Realmuto, Will Smith, Adley Rutschman, Sean Murphy, Wilson Contreras, Alejandro Kirk, Travis d'Arnaud, Salvador Perez, Danny Jansen, Tyler Stevenson. Do I think that some of these guys belong in front of Cal Raleigh? Yes. Definitively, yes. Realmuto's a fantastic player. Will Smith's really good. Rutschman, very easily, in most years last year, would have been the rookie of the year. I think Julio was an exceptional case that ended up beating him out. I mean, Wilson Contreras has been a really good player for a while. Kirk, really good. I mean, he had a great, consistent offensive year. All right, maybe. And that's when you're going to start to lose. Maybe Salvador Perez, okay, maybe. Danny Jansen and Tyler Stevenson? Get the heck out of here. Danny Jansen's a backup catcher, for God's sakes. What are we talking about? So our guy, Brandon Gustafson, who works here on 710 or CLSports.com, excuse me, says he tweets this yesterday, leaving the guy who led the position in homers while also finishing as a Gold Glove finalist as one of the best defenders and pitch framers in baseball is quite the choice. Danny Jensen, a second Toronto catcher who played 72 games and started just 58 behind the plate last year, kind of with him on that. I mean, that's just sort of silly. But I will say, and unfortunately for Brandon, I don't know if he realized this. Maybe he did. I mean, he's into baseball, so maybe he figured this out. He's a pretty astute guy. What he may not realize is that Toronto is in the AL East.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to
shoot.
I don't want to like hurt anybody's feelings here. Brandon's a pretty smart guy. I don't want to accuse him of being, you know, one of these useful idiots that Dietrich Bonhoeffer is talking about. Yeah. I don't think I would put him in that category. Maybe he's evil, but certainly not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He plays for Toronto. Yeah. Toronto's in the AL East, so the people who look at these types of things get a lot of view.
What about the Reds, though?
Huh?
Tyler Stevenson?
Yeah, that one was weird. I can't really speak to that. I don't know what's going on there.
Do you want to know what his war was last year?
-0.1.
Do you know what Cal's was?
I don't know. Was it -0.1?
His was 1.5.
Yeah.
Cal's was 3.8.
In like half a year. Like, get out of here, man. That's weak.
27 home runs from Cal, 6 from Tyler Stevenson.
Yeah, that makes sense. And by the way, it's not like Stevenson plays in a bandbox. Oh, wait, he does in Cincinnati. So
wait a minute. Stevenson played how many games last year, too?
This whole thing is very silly. I just
50 games?
That does sort of feel like they just sort of forgot. Like, oh, shoot. We meant to put that other guy on there. We kind of forgot about him. Oh, I forgot. Darn it. I don't know. Maybe if he had released a statement from Dr. Stephen Shin yesterday, maybe then he would have sort of been front of mind for people.
Yeah,
and maybe this is why, you know, Russ had his whole heel turn, because he didn't get recognized on enough of these lists. A couple of years from now, Cal Raleigh's going to be out there, like, demanding things, right? He's a Boris guy. Just wait until he's, like, you know, on Dancing with the Stars and, like, wearing his cowboy boots and his special Cal Raleigh hat. Yeah, dude, it's only a matter of time before all that happens, because it's things like this that get him.
The 360 says the list was the result of an algorithm. They said he didn't make the list because of no consistent stats in his career.
And yet. I think it was, I also read another thing. It was over 2 years, 21 and 22.
Well, that's fair. I'll buy that one.
But
well, I feel like they didn't make that
like
clear.
You should
when
make
they
this list of the, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I didn't watch, I'll be fair. I didn't watch the list. I'm just seeing the top 10
well,
as
but they've
as
been
it was
doing these
around.
Rankings for the last week, and they're doing the top 10 at every position. How did Julio make it then?
He was just that good.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, don't you think you need to like have a little bit of oversight on it? Like if you're just using an algorithm and that's the way you're advertising it, I don't know. I feel like maybe a little bit of human oversight. It's like trying to drive one of Elon's new cars. Like, yeah, that's fine, but you better have at least a little human oversight so you don't go crashing into a guardrail somewhere, because this list crashes directly into a guardrail.
It's funny that you guys are critiquing lists.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
What does Brock always say? Confession, bad for the reputation, good for the soul. I'll confess. I laughed and really enjoyed the skills competition last night or yesterday afternoon. I watched for like an hour or so and found myself completely captivated by it, which almost never happens to me.
It was unexpected, but now that you say it, I should have expected it.
I really ended up enjoying it. I watched the longest drive competition, Jordan Poyer beating TJ Hawkinson on the final drive. That was pretty exciting. Daron Payne and Za'Darius Smith, who basically had never golfed before in their life. That was kind of entertaining. By the way, neither of their swings were significantly worse than mine. I've been playing for like a decade now. So that was sort of fun. As for the Seahawks, Geno scored 20 points, came in third in the accuracy competition. Probably not his best effort. Tariq Woolen struggled in dodgeball. He was one of the first guys out and sort of didn't make much of a mark, as I predicted. Best guy in dodgeball by far, Saquon Barkley. Quick feet. Very quick feet. Hard to get out. He was a star in that capacity.
Well, it was, I think, two running backs and a tight end left in the end.
So. Saw Max Crosby get drilled right in the hip, nearly knocked him over. I don't know. I ended up finding it incredibly entertaining and laughing throughout the whole thing. And it had some fun moments, like Derek Carr getting real honest.
You've thrown touchdown passes in Vegas before. You've been on fire. Have you ever been that hot in Las Vegas?
Not that hot. It's probably why I'm going somewhere else.
Nice.
I mean, that's a pretty honest moment there from Derek Carr. Like, yeah, I'm going to have to go somewhere else because I haven't been good enough. You take that as a shot at himself or a shot at the Raiders?
I took it as a shot at the Raiders. I don't think he's taking shots at himself.
Okay. I mean, I thought there might have been a little bit of self-deprecation in there. Maybe not. A little hard to say. Anyway, it was pretty entertaining. And then it will conclude with the big flag football. It's like a series of flag football games. So 7-on-7. So that'll be this weekend. I don't know. Maybe I'll actually watch some of it because I did find yesterday fairly fun.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right. The market for Geno Smith continues to be, I think, difficult to pin down. This week, ESPN listed him as the fifth best free agent, pegged his value around $30 million a year. Yesterday, Pro Football Focus went even farther. They called him the second best free agent on the market and were of the opinion that he would be a whole lot worth a whole lot more than that $30 million. Max Kellerman on yesterday with Bump and Stacy says,
this franchise tag, you got to pay all that in one season. So, like, you give a guy a three-year deal and guarantee 2 years of the money, you're spreading it out over three seasons, right? So, for cap hit purposes, if it's 33, you really go up to a little under 40, and you're saving money on the cap. And that's why you do it. So, it seems to me it's a no-brainer that Geno's at least 2 years guaranteed at $70 million over a three-year contract, right? Like, why wouldn't you do that?
Well... It is an argument, the why wouldn't you do it. We'll talk to Stacey Ross more about that at 9 o'clock this morning. Max might have answered his own question, though.
Pete Carroll clearly can win with Geno Smith. Now, can you win the whole thing? Yeah, that remains to be seen, right? You do feel like you're not at an advantage if you're playing another team that's also good and well-coached, but they have a spectacular quarterback.
But well, like, I think that's the answer right there, right? What's the goal? To be good for the next 2 years or to win a Super Bowl? Can you win the whole thing? That's still the question you're trying to answer. Now, if you believe you can win the whole thing with Geno Smith, by all means, you should resign him. And if you believe that there is a number at which you can win, and maybe you can't win it with anybody else that's out there. Maybe the whole, you know, Drew Lock and try to spend your money elsewhere. Maybe that doesn't get you there either. But the goal is to win a Super Bowl, not just to make yourself better over the course of the next year or two.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, after listening to Mariners players and front office members here over the course of the last few days, I would say the biggest takeaway I have is just how much confidence they're projecting.
With a team that is still one of the youngest, I think the youngest in our division, we are still sub 29 years old on our average age. We're coming off consecutive 91 seasons and a playoff berth a year ago. We got three first-round draft picks and multiple things to be excited about headed into this draft. We just signed what I think is one of the premier young players in the international space. We've got the All-Star game in July. We've got the Winter Classic coming in January. It's a good time to be here.
Obviously, it fired Brock up yesterday when he heard it. But Jerry's right. There are a lot of good reasons to be excited right now. It doesn't sound like false bravado or like they're trying to sell something that isn't going to work. They believe in themselves. I think they believe in their team, and most of all, I think they believe in their plan. All right, well, speaking of that plan, one of the holes in it right now is the DH position. There are some guys out there and available. I don't know if any of these names intrigue you. I noticed Gary Sanchez is still out there looking for a job, and he could also be a third catcher. Miguel Sano is out working for teams. He's got a lot of power and not a lot of contact. Yuri Gurriel is a free agent. Luke Voit, who led the league in home runs a couple of years ago. Mike Moustakas is still out there and available. So there are some names, but guys who are coming off at least a year or two that have been not quite what you're looking for. I got one other thought for DH. What if Evan White ends up being good, plays first base, and Ty France ends up as your regular DH? It's certainly not impossible.
He'll come to spring training. You know, he needs ABs. He's missed a lot of plate appearances over the last 2 years, and you know that what that looks like. He'll compete for a spot on the roster. The likelihood is we'll want him to gather up some at-bats in AAA and get back to some type of routine. But he's got the talent where you don't hold him back. It's up to his health to determine the impact that he can have on our team. And we're still hopeful that that's a real thing.
So do you hear that and believe that if Evan White is healthy, he's on the team? Not necessarily to start the year, because as he said, he's going to need some at-bats to kind of get back into the swing of things. But if he goes down at AAA and over the course of the first 3-4 weeks of the season hits 330 down there, don't you get the sense he's going to be up with this big league club?
Sure.
Right? And at that point, goodbye Tommy La Stella or somebody like that. Evan White comes in. He's a better first baseman than Ty France is defensively. And now all of a sudden, you're open to using Ty France in a bunch of different situations.
Sure.
Maybe he's your DH most of the time. Maybe he slides into second now and again. We talked about maybe the need for another right-handed bat option if Dylan Moore is playing some shortstop. Maybe he gives Eugenio a break now and again at third base. He's capable of playing those positions on occasion. Just saying. Another way you could maybe spin this roster if Evan White ends up being what he was always supposed to be, which is why they gave him that big contract. It's everything you need to know. And we do that quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk Show.
And he can carry a load to stay healthy with Ty as well, because both of them
could use occasional break.
Yeah,
no, I think that's a really good point. So I don't know. I don't know exactly how that's going to play out. And gambling and betting on Evan White is probably not something anybody wants to start talking about. But that doesn't mean it won't, like, it couldn't happen. They're not betting on Evan White, right? They're not. This roster has been set up with Evan White in AAA or injured. They have to assume that. But if he pleasantly surprises you, it all of a sudden opens up some other options that now you can sort of,
problem to have.
That's exactly right. So,
I mean, kind of what it looked like might happen with Kyle Lewis at first last year, and then he got drilled in the head. And
well, that's the way it was supposed to be, right? Out. They had all, and that's why I kind of didn't believe. We'll play you the Jerry Dipoto interview coming up in a minute. And I thought he was very hard on the team and himself on how they handled Kelnick last year. And, oh, we didn't give him enough, protection. Like, really? You had Kyle Lewis, you had Mitch Haniger, you had Jesse Winker, you had Jared Kelnick. Like, how many other, you had Mitch Haniger.
For a while, you had Upton.
Right? I mean, like, how many guys were you supposed to have? I never really bought that. People were crushing, you don't have enough depth in the outfield. Like, really? He's got like six dudes out there that are all major league caliber. I'm not sure exactly what else he was supposed to do. So if it does end up working out with Evan White this year, that would be just another thing that would be a feather in their cap and a nice way for them to probably balance out some things that aren't going to work out as well as you expect them to as we sit here in February. All right. Speaking of that, Jerry was pumped up yesterday, and he did go into some great depth about Kelnick, about Evan White, about their future, about this season. Stick around. You'll hear from him next. It is Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports application.
The Jerry Dipoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Good morning, Jerry.
Morning, boys. How we doing?
We're great. Busy day yesterday. It was nice to see you over there and just see everybody. It was exciting getting that whole group together and seeing how many people were out there at the press conference. There's clearly some buzz around this team right now.
In addition to, I guess, unveiling a new press room, and I was blown away with the volume. I feel like that was three or four times the typical amount of media that pours out for our annual media press day. And I thought it was terrific. And the questions are great. And, you know, players, staff, I thought it was a fun day from beginning to end.
Yeah, news people there, right? It wasn't just the sports media. News media was there. You can see, and that's always a good thing when you start to cross over into the folks who are not, you know, spending every day thinking about this stuff like we are on this station or in this show. So I guess after, I should say, you know, you did the press conference, you went on Wyman and Bob, you were all over the place yesterday. Is there anything or anyone you haven't been asked about in the last 24 hours that you want to talk about?
But in addition to the presser last night, you know, we've done a couple of meals, you know, a dinner event last night, and there'll be another tomorrow. But it's just that week for us. You know, we used to reference this as Hell Week, you know, the week that myself, Scott, our players, everybody's going to go through the grind. And you know, it's changed a little bit over the years. But, you know, some of the things that we get to do, you know, the event I did last night, which I've now done, you know, seven times in the last 8 years, the opportunity to sit, you know, on a stage and talk about our team and the things that excite us about this group. It's, you know, it's fun when you go back through time and you think about some of the conversations or some of the talking points that we threw out there in 2017 or 2019 and how far we've come as an organization. So, you know, maybe less about individual players, the way our offseason went or what we project for the season, and more about just, you know, sitting back and really taking it in how far we've come organizationally in recent years.
You know, I have said multiple times on this show and over the station, Jerry, that I don't think that we've ever dealt with a more transparent, certainly president, GM. I mean, you tell us, you share with us the plan. You're a pretty open book in many ways, wanting, you know, people to learn and, you know, share from your perspective. Where did you learn that? Where did you decide, you know what, if I'm in this position of leadership as a president, as a general manager, I'm front facing for the organization, I'm going to be a pretty transparent, open book. I guess, where did you learn that, or whom did you learn that from?
You know, as we grow in whatever our life is, you know, whatever our work life looks like, you learn the good and the bad from the people that you're around through the years. And, you know, and for years and years as players, and Scott and I talked about this a lot as we were transitioning off the field and into, you know, the roles that we play today, that we, as players, all we ever talked about was we just want people to talk to us like we're grownups, you know, to tell us the real story, what the expectations are of us, give us insights as to how we'll be used, what, you know, what our jobs are. And most people in their walk of life have some form of job description. They know what it is. And, you know, and that's not necessarily true 30, 40 years ago for a professional baseball player. And I suspect that's true of professional athletics. So, you know, it was an intentional, you know, development to try to do the things that we always said we found would be important. Be honest with our players, tell them the story, even if the story sometimes is what they don't want to hear. And, you know, and somewhere in there, I baked in the idea that, you know, when I was a kid, I was so interested in what was happening with my favorite team. And, you know, if I'm not interested and I encounter someone who's willing to share with me what they're doing, you know, I feel like your interest, your curiosity just grows. And if that grows and your love of the game or your love of the team grows, then I did my job. And I'm thinking, you know, through the years that's what we want to be about is making, you know, our fans, making our players feel like they are part of what's happening in the control room as much as we possibly can.
So that's a perfect lead in to what I thought was the best news yesterday. And there was a bunch of good news yesterday. We can talk through Dylan Moore and, you know, Diego Castillo, et cetera. But the news that I nearly clapped at the press conference yesterday was that Luis Castillo is not going to be participating in the WBC. And you said that there was a conversation about that. So what is that conversation between the team and the player look like heading into that decision?
Yeah, you know, I like you, it didn't hurt my feelings. I've known about it for a little while. But you know, when we acquired Luis and we immediately started the conversations about extending him, which you know, shortly after he came to Seattle, we were able to bring that to fruition. You know, this became part of our conversation. You know, as we get into the spring, you know, Luis has developed a knack in recent years for you know, shutting it down early in the off season. He starts his throwing program late. He comes into spring training and uses it as a ramp to get himself ready. And I've talked about it in very similar ways to Felix in his prime. You know, that was very much Felix's routine, something like that. And, you know, and we wanted to take every protective measure we could to make sure that we were prepared for whatever, you know, Luis's programs looked like. And when we started talking about this, one of our concerns was, if that's the practice, and you've got to be ready to go, you know, shortly after Valentine's Day to go throw actual starts in competitive environments, we just wanted to make sure that we were, you know, in the right space. And, you know, through those discussions, it was, I think Luis viewed that once we invested long term in him as a part of the Mariners, I think the return on his part was just to invest in the next 5 years as a Seattle Mariner and, you know, and make sure that everything he was doing was geared toward taking us to the postseason and being ready to pitch there. And you know, that's ultimately where we arrived, that he thought this was best for him. And we all thought it was best for the collective, he and the Mariners.
How about just his presence? How much do you want just your, you know, I was saying earlier, just your most talented, one of your most talented players in the whole organization. How about just his presence with your team? I mean, you did trade for him in July. This will be his first spring training as a Mariner, too. How big a deal will just him being available and being present for the rest of these pitchers and the rest of the ball club?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Then he, for in many ways, flew under the radar, having played, you know, his major league career in Cincinnati and making his name there. Cincinnati is not a huge media market. It's not a team that's been, you know, on the postseason landscape in recent years. And, you know, as such, when we traded for him, I think people were kind of surprised or shocked at the level of pitcher that he was walking in the door. And, you know, we think he's a legitimate top of the rotation guy. He's got a presence to him, and you saw it in the biggest way in his very first outing. You know, in New York against the Yankees, that home start here against the Yankees, you saw it in his two playoff starts. He has that factor when he walks out to the mound. And I said it yesterday, you know, we didn't view our offseason goal as trying to close a 16 game gap with the Astros. We don't feel like we were a true 16 game separation away from them because our team changed so much while that was all happening. So, you know, broadly, yeah, we finished behind them by that amount. You know, more acutely, what we saw after Luis joined the team, second half George Kirby was considerably different than first half George Kirby. You know, June to September Julio was very different than April and May Julio. And then the same for Cal Raleigh, and the same, our team evolved. And, you know, and through all that, we didn't actually play the Astros very much in the second half, I think four times. So the hole we dug for ourselves, we dug before our team had truly evolved into the team that we ultimately became. And I think that's an important thing to remember as we look toward 23 is that young teams who are constantly growing, and we saw a bit of a greenhouse effect midseason, there's still opportunity for us to continue to grow because, you know, that's how our team is built.
Hey, Jerry, one of the guys you mentioned yesterday is Evan White, and he's not been talked about much. You mentioned yesterday that he's fully healthy for the first time since his rash of injuries started. What's a reasonable expectation for him? I mean, you know, we're probably guilty of not thinking about him as much as you guys do in the organization. So what should we be saying and thinking about Evan White right now?
You know, we're excited about where Evan's at. And obviously, you can look at the fact that we extended him to stay here, first round draft pick. He excelled in our system through Double A. And we talked about some of the unfortunate development that occurred for a number of players with that 2020 season. I think Evan is among, you know, those who was probably most harmed. And, you know, right now our medical people, our trainers and strength coaches couldn't be more excited about where he is physically. I think that's true of Evan himself. He's had a really long couple of years with very real injuries. And, but this is an incredibly athletic player who, I think, and I've said this before, is as good as any defensive first baseman I've ever laid an eye on. He's just as smooth, silky. There is no such thing as a bad hop with Evan at first base. And, you know, to have him back in a good place, he can swing the bat, he hits the ball hard. You know, and before, you know, going back down with another setback in September, his final month last year in Tacoma was just, you know, eye-opening. Like, this guy can still do a lot of really interesting things, and he's still a young player. So he'll come to spring training. You know, he needs ABs. He's missed a lot of plate appearances over the last 2 years, and, you know, that what that looks like, he'll compete for a spot on the roster. The likelihood is we'll want him to gather up some at-bats in AAA and get back to some type of routine. But he's got the talent where you don't hold him back. There's really, it's up to his health to determine the impact that he can have on our team. And we're still hopeful that that's a real thing.
Hey, Jerry, compare and contrast athletically Jared and Evan for me.
Jared's a strength athlete. You know, he is strong. He's got great body control and balance. And, you know, Evan is there. He's got a little of that ballet dancer in him. You know, he is the twitch. He's got some, they're explosive. Evan is explosive in a speed forward burst type of way. You know, Jared is explosive coming, you know, up from the earth, if that makes sense. You know,
and you measure that, right? Don't you have the force boards or what have you that kind of measures that amount of force? Is Jared like off the charts in the organization? I know you talked about Munoz being a triple jumper and actually bringing so much force off of the ground. Are those two guys right near the top in the organization of that?
Yes. And actually, in almost all the things we measure, both Jared and Evan excel. You know, they are kind of chart toppers in that category. And you know, I'd say Evan does it with a unique degree of flexibility. You know, in addition to the strength and explosiveness, he's also incredibly flexible. And, you know, that's a rare combination. You literally, if you naturally saw left-handers throw from shortstop, you'd say, that's probably a shortstop athlete. But it's, you know, he's a left-handed thrower. So it's more often that he's going to see first base, the corner outfields. And he's a tremendous athlete, and really looking forward to seeing what he comes in the spring training looking like.
Been talking a lot about Kelnick here over the last few days, and I started working on a comp between him and Trot Nixon, which turned out to work in more ways than I thought it was going to in terms of their personality, some of their skill sets, strength, hard work ethic, et cetera, both drafted, I think, 6 and 7. And Trot, if you remember, kind of went through watching Nomar Garciaparra kind of cruise past him after being drafted the following year by the Red Sox. And it finally took him at age 25. I know Kelnick's only 23, where they said, okay, we're going to put you in the best position to succeed. We're going to only hit you against righties. You're going to hit ninth all year long. We're going to take all the pressure off you. And obviously he went on to a very good, solid career. Is that part of what the plan is right now with Kelnick, to kind of give him his, I don't want to say necessarily last, but maybe last best chance to try to figure it out here in Seattle?
Yeah, I did. And like you, and you hit on it when you said he's 23, there's, you know, I'm loath to say last chance, but this is his best chance, you know, and last year, and I don't know if we did the best we could do to set Jared up for success a year ago, where, you know, there wasn't a lot of net to catch him if he struggled. And the expectation was, all right, he's been through his struggle in 21 and this is a new year, new Jared, will be good. And you know, obviously it was a struggle for him again. And we had to make a change there. And, you know, this year, how we tried to put him in a better position is to go build a group around him that allowed him the opportunity to take an 0-for-8 over a couple of days stretch. And without sinking into that same long-term struggle by having guys like AJ Pollock on your club. And you know, that it really does offset some of the threat, because so much of the struggle that Jared has had is often caused by running into a couple of tough lefties. And then he puts some pressure on himself and it escalates. But he is, I know we spent a lot of our day talking about it yesterday. He is incredibly talented. He's still incredibly young. He has conquered every level to this point other than the major leagues. And, you know, for us not to continue to give him the reps and allow what he does on a baseball field to break through in the big leagues, he could be a difference making player, not just for us in 23, but over the course of the next, you know, who knows how many years. He's 23 years old. And that's that is an enticing thing that we just can't walk past because the talent's just too great.
I should probably know this, but if you send him down at any point this year, will that then be his last option year?
He has one option left. Okay. One option.
So in theory, though, if he's sent down at some point this year, the following year would be really his last chance to stick in the big leagues with the Mariners.
Correct. Okay. You know, that's when you start the carousel of guys going up and down or DFAs when they continue to struggle. But, you know, for right now, we're in a very good place with Jared, where I think we have a wonderful opportunity for him at the big league level. We built a team that I think, you know, features him in the way that he should be featured right now in his career. And we're also in a position with some depth in young left-hand hitters that he's not flying alone. There's he has help from Taylor Trammell, from Cade Marlowe. And, you know, there's been a lot of pressure on Jared over these last couple of years. And to relieve some of that, I think, is going to go a long way, in addition to the wonderful work we think he's done this offseason.
You know, one area I think where Seattle sports fans, I hope they don't take it for granted, I don't think they do, is to have two organizations like you and the Seahawks across the street have the kind of continuity you have. You mentioned your years back with Scott, all the way back to when you were players, and you guys have been kind of at the hip together for so long. Same with John and Pete, and both of you guys organizationally, I think, love to learn your learners. That's what Pete Carroll calls it. We got to learn our learners, our new people, our new acquisitions. You had a chance yesterday to learn a little bit more about Teoscar Hernandez, right? It was our first opportunity to see him live and in person and connect with him, and he was with you guys all day. What did you learn about your new acquisition in right field?
First thing I learned was incredibly articulate. You know, he can really put words together, and he's easy to spend time with. He came up to the office and spent a little time with us before we went downstairs, which, you know, I thought was a mature thing to do. You don't usually see that where guys, you know, check in and pop into the office, which I found it refreshing. And, you know, and this is a positive development in that when we first acquired Teoscar and called him on the phone, he could not have been any more warm and inviting. And, you know, this is a guy who spent, you know, some formative years with the Blue Jays, a good team, playing with a lot of players that he knows well and likes spending time with. And, you know, and having been traded a couple times in my career, I know that there's a sting that's associated with that. But you'd never know it. And you know, yesterday I asked him, you know, who have you been in communication with from our team? And he rattled off a list of about a dozen guys. And I thought it was terrific that the things that we do, first of all, you know, kudos to our guys for reaching out and connecting with Teoscar and welcoming him to the group. But he will fit right in, and that to him, it's a community. And I think that really shone through in his comments yesterday. It's about building something special in the relationships you have in the clubhouse. And that's important on our team, really important.
Hey, something I was thinking about, I've heard you guys mention that, you know, you'd like to get J.P. Crawford off his feet a little bit. I know he's been working at Driveline this offseason and sort of changing some of his prep for the year, which is awesome. If you're using Dylan Moore a little bit more at shortstop, I would think, especially against, you know, left-handed hitting, what does that mean at second base? Because in theory, there's sort of a platoon righty-lefty at second base. Does that mean we might see some Dylan Moore, Sam Haggerty middle infields? How does that play out?
I think that's a very possible, you know, outcome. And there's also the potential of playing Colton Wong versus the lefties, because the defensive advantage is so great. And he will otherwise be getting some off days versus the tough lefties when Demo's stepping in. So, you know, it's probably not a hard and fast Haggerty and Moore versus lefties on the day that Now, JP's off, but that's, I think you'll see that combination more than a couple of times along the way. But I think the more likely outcome is that on some of those occasions where we're just taking JP off his feet, Colton will play second base, Demo will play shortstop, and we'll do it based on what we think the quality of the matchup is with Colton and that lefty.
Hey, last question for you, and we'll let you run here, Jerry. We talked about this last week with Goldie and the number of position players that cracked the top 10. I think you had five of them on the top 10 list around baseball, and we were a little taken that Luis Castillo was not one of the top 10 starting pitchers. Did that surprise you a little bit, or is that back to kind of what you said about maybe being in Miami and Cincinnati and markets where he was not exposed as much?
No, I think it's more of the latter, and he wasn't a big name on the national stage prior to the second half of last year, despite pitching in a couple of all-star games, having the kind of stuff that you see pour out of his hand. And despite the fact that if you look at the projections for 2023, he lands right in that zone. And if you look at the performance over the last 3 years, I think he's ninth or 10th in starting pitcher war. So those are his people. And, you know, our job as a team is to make sure that he gets enough exposure on the national stage that the rest of the baseball world is aware of how good Luis is, because he has been that good over the course of the last couple of years. He projects to be that good moving forward, and we saw it with our own eyes. But you know, subjective lists are what they are. If he wasn't in the top 10, my guess he was 10 and a half. He's in that conversation.
Those are his people.
Well, and if he does it again this year, he'll be playing in an all-star game at home. How cool will that be? It was kind of fun seeing the guy in from Major League Baseball yesterday talking about what that's going to look like and the week leading up to the all-star game here. I will admit I hadn't been thinking about it a lot, but once he was there, I was like, oh, you know what? That's going to be pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And then even having the draft here at home is going to be fun as well.
You know, you think about it and all the good things that are happening for the Mariners right now, even just Seattle sports in general, but, you know, all the good things that are happening for the Mariners and going into this season. Yesterday I was asked a question and heavens knows there was a ton of questions yesterday. But one of the questions we were asked are you disturbed by the fact that you look at the top 100 prospect list and you only have three? And I said, whoa, 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 three's good. You know, I can remember years where we were at zero. So it's a three's good. It's an above average number with a team that is still one of the youngest. I think the youngest in our division. We are still, you know, sub 29 years old on our average age. We're coming off consecutive 91 seasons and a playoff berth a year ago. We got three first round draft picks and multiple things to be excited about headed into this draft. We just signed what I think is one of the premier young players in the international space. We've got the All-Star game in July. We've got the winter classic coming in January. It's a good time to be here.
Jerry, thank you. Great stuff. Thank you for yesterday and for today. We really are getting pumped for this. Just a couple weeks away from spring training. We'll talk to you next week.
All right,
there you go. There's Jerry DePoto, who has had a busy couple of days meeting with the media, talking to everybody. No longer Hell Week, he says, although somebody pointed out yesterday. What did they say? Anybody who thinks they have to talk to Salk during the week calls it Hell Week? That's just not right. How dare
you? More and I are living in it?
That is, how dare you? Just not right at all. All right, coming up next, actually, I want to follow up on that theme, not the Hell Week theme, but where Jerry ended and the excitement heading into next year. We'll do it coming up. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.